The Big Red Couch, a podcast about making role-playing games. A group of GMs and players draw ideas from the mystery box and bring their game pitches to you.
Good day, listeners, and welcome to the Big Red Couch. Today's episode is episode 64, Swamp Alligator Hoedown. And on the couch today, we've got a special guest, Mac, aka Burning, from the forums and comments.
Hiya.
And Craig, our regular Craig.
Hello, I'm Craig.
Yes, you are.
Cool.
We also have Ben, who just did the introduction.
Yeah, I should have done me too. All right. Yeah.
And the card idea, it's noted on it, comes from Gulo T.
Okay.
It should also be noted that I can't spell the word alligator. What is that? Looks wrong. Yeah. No spell check in real life.
All right.
Fair enough spelling that I didn't get confused and do something else instead.
Woo!
All right, so welcome, Mac.
Thanks for
joining us today and helping us kick around this idea. I must admit, I'm a little bit... Ideas are thin on the ground for me, so any assistance will be greatly appreciated. We were chatting a little bit earlier, and you mentioned that just a little bit of background. You were going to suggest we could share role-playing credentials or history.
Yeah, I was slightly curious to know what was your first role-playing system that you played in. Because I've guessed from hearing various stray remarks that we're close to contemporaries. Mm-hmm. I might be wrong about that. But
I was born in 72.
Yeah, I was born in 69, so pretty much. So I guess I can go first on that one, and my first system actually was the old Gamma World. Which is a strange system. I kind of realized after the fact that they were kind of trying to impose D&D mechanics without actually including player levels, which led to some oddness, but...
Yeah, actually, do you recall what the... It wasn't a class-based system, was it? It was...
No, there was really... You could play a mutant, and so if you did, you would have mutant powers, and you had the choice between playing a mutant human or a mutant animal.
Mm. Or even a mutant plant, I think.
Probably you could. I don't really remember if they had much of that in the rulebook. And you could play an unmutated human, and I don't think I ever played with anybody who picked that option. But yeah, there were no levels. It was just kind of, if you played long enough, I think the idea is that you would increase your store of equipment that was lying around, because it was very much a beer and pretzels approach, I think. You know, just, you know, despite the existence of an apocalypse, the expectation is that you would build up a storehouse of this amazing future tech that was left lying around.
There was quite a robust system about figuring out how future tech worked. There's like a terrifying flowchart, a lot of which, you know, would end in, you know, like fatal results for the people doing the investigating and so forth. And that was pretty awesome. And I remember that you can't forget the ginormous multicolored table that they used. It was a D100 roll versus sort of like a strength of a threat or an attack or something, and that was quite a... They might even have had exploding dice or something similar, because I'm pretty sure it wasn't just from like 1 to 100. It was gradiated somewhere. Well, it was supposed to model a bell curve, to some degree, and that was pretty interesting. And the way they couched things was pretty, like, if you were traveling overland, you would have threats in various areas, and you'd get like a toxic threat in this particular area of a certain level, and even in places where there wasn't, say, radiation or goo or whatever, there was also the threat of getting lost. I always found that cute. It was like, aha, the terrain attacks you with getting lost.
I think they liked their tables in that game. I think my favorite one was just, you know, finding the random bit of only slightly useful future tech.
Yeah, and there was a huge catalog of possible mutations, and all of those were random.
Yeah.
And most of them were useful.
Most of them, yeah.
I do remember, I've never played the game, which is why I was sort of sitting here listening, because I've never played or read it. It was one of those ones that was, I'd quite like to play this, but the opportunity never came up. I do remember a Dragon magazine article where somebody was suggesting the relatively revolutionary for the time idea that rather than randomly rolling one's mutations in Gamma World, you could simply pick them, because that way you didn't have your blue whale play a character who couldn't interact with the rest of the party. You could in fact pick the, I don't know, amphibious or levitating mutation. And I'll be honest, I would want to be in that game. I would want to be in the party where one of the players is a levitating blue whale.
That would be interesting.
It'd pose some challenges.
I think you ought to put levitating blue whale in your box, actually.
I will make a note. Hold that thought.
That's an interesting one. That would have been an interesting place to start. I don't know if this counts, but my first exposure to role-play gaming systems of a role-playing nature was the Fighting Fantasy books. And I got through quite a few related sort of things, like the it's Fighting Fantasy, there was the generic sort of Choose Your Own Adventure and so forth. And there was things like Mark of the Ninja, Way of the Ninja, random other sort of, and the Lone Wolf. There's quite a bunch of those, and those I was very fond of those for a time. But when I actually got into role-playing games, it was actually the Redbox D&D set that I started off with. Wound up GMing a fair amount at that, but actually passed on pretty quickly to things like Middle-Earth role-playing and Judge Dredd and so forth, because a lot of the people I knew were playing Warhammer and other Games Workshop stuff.
I played briefly in a Middle-Earth role-playing game in college, and so I've been exposed to Role Master, as it is sometimes called.
Yeah, well, it's a cut-down system. Literally, it's like the first 10 levels and like a couple of feet of charts worth of that system. It's actually quite compact and interesting as far as that goes. But when you get into the supplements, you actually start dealing with like some of the characters from the extensive Tolkien canon. Gets quite crazy.
I'm just now imagining a system of rating role-playing games based on table feet, or possibly table yards, and wondering whether there are any that have enough supplements to get up to the, it's just easier to use table miles.
Oh, it just feels like use it like a square indices rating.
Okay, so it's like the square foot rating for floor area, except in the sense it's table area. So you start out with square inches and just move up. Nice.
But thicker supplements, though, I mean, you got to get the third dimension in there, because it was like some games have supplements that you could stun an ox with, and then the others just sort of give you like a little flimsy.
Good for making paper darts or fanning yourself in the heat, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Well, I did hear the theory for Warhammer 40K in particular, that the faster way of doing the battles is to simply get all the supplements that both sides have, remove any books in common, measure the height of the resulting stack, and whoever has the tallest stack of supplements is going to win. I don't know how accurate it is, but it strikes me as the sort of thing that was said by somebody somebody in a very cynical mood who got completely demolished by somebody with an awful lot of supplements.
I may have used that at the past. I played Warhammer back when it was just like the original Rogue Trader book in the late 80s and so forth. It looked really cool and kind of skirmishy and interesting, and quickly exploded out into sort of like, everyone has a supplement, everything is different, and you need very specific armies. And I understand why financially they've made these choices, but game stopped appealing to me about that time.
Yeah. I'm desperately trying to think of what my first RPG was, and the answer is either first edition AD&D, basically my first year of university. There was some sort of RPG that I played back when I was a much younger teenager, but I had no idea what the game was, and I'm less and less convinced that the person running it did either.
Yeah.
I'm working on the theory that that was probably Redbox D&D or something, but mm-hmm. I never actually saw, or don't remember seeing a rule book, because this was a number of years ago now. It could have been 30 years ago at this point. But yeah, even now, I'm not convinced that anybody in that room knew what the hell they were doing.
Yeah. Actually, I recently dredged up memories about a couple of role-playing systems. One was Golden Heroes, which a friend of mine, who was a really almost eerily talented artist with a biro. He's got a particular style that he uses, but he can just draw things with a biro, and was a big superheroes fan. But we played Golden Heroes, which was an old Games Workshop imprint, for about a year, and then they killed it, like they do with most of the stuff except for their main flagships. And that was interesting because apparently it had a mechanic where you basically randomly rolled superpowers and you came up with a compelling backstory to justify them. If it wasn't compelling, you didn't get the powers.
Oh, that sounds like an interesting challenge.
Yeah, no, it's like, wow, okay, it's a little bit stark, but it was, I remember it worked pretty well, and that was up against, like, Marvel superheroes at the time, and even an early version of Champions.
It's extremely narrative for the era.
Yeah, trying to remember how, it was blessed with quite a bit of artwork from, like, 2000 AD artists and so forth, which was probably helped make it even more interesting. And yeah, I think we even had like GURP supers and so forth floating around at that point. So it did pretty well. The other one that I'm kind of weirded out that I remember, I think I only read while I was working part-time in a like games and hobby store. I had a back room with lots of role-playing games, a lot of them very random origin, because I think the store where I was in was kind of had been set up subsequent to a couple of other stores around the country, and kind of got the back catalogue and all the stuff that hadn't sold shoved their way. The manager was busy opening all of the magic boosters and rifling through them, which probably contributed to shutting down shortly after I stopped working there.
It could so not have helped.
Indeed, indeed. You do not want that monkey on your back if you're if you're trying to manage a store. But I remembered something terrible from it. It turns out the game was called Battlelords the 23rd Century. I can't even remember like what the book looked like or track much down about it. But they had a species of basically giant lizards, which possibly will flow into our conversation, called a ram python. And basically they're big grunts. They're pretty stupid. They don't have much of a culture. But one of the central tenets of their culture is that on their volcanic world, volcanoes are the most impressive and scary thing around. And at some point, they discovered that they could light the methane from their digestive gases on fire and thereby imitate the majesty and power of the volcanoes of their world. And they have this whole dumb, terrifying thing about how they do like horoscopes or soothsaying via fart. It's like, and I'm leafing through this thing, and this is the only thing that has wedged in my mind about this game for 20 years now. And it's like, yeah, Battlelords, the 23rd century. It's got farting
lizards.
I'm
not at all surprised that something like that wedged in your mind, because that's the exact sort of thing that no matter how hard you try, it is impossible to expunge once it's...
Yeah.
What has been seen cannot be unseen.
What has been heard about on an RPG podcast cannot be unheard. So, thank you, Ben. Thank you straight to hell for that one.
Oh, no, sorry, I've got to read this. The art of Chunga is no laughing matter, and the Rams take it seriously. The rest of the Alliance population consider the act obscene. Drawing mud, in commas, is shameful, and any Ram who does so while making Chunga must not call out the volcano god for several weeks.
So you actually kept this and have it on hand.
No, I dredged it up a couple. I think we had some long-ranging conversation that's probably either side of this episode in places. Somewhere in there was a reference that made me think, oh yeah, the farting lizard game. Why am I remembering that now? Stop it, brain. And so yeah, this is my way of passing on the curse, Sadako style, across the internet, so people are going to go, oh no.
In the interests of accuracy, listeners, the next time I visit Ben's place, I will be checking for a print copy of that book, because I am not 100% sure I believe his, oh, I looked it up on the internet, story. I'm just wondering whether there is this copy hidden away somewhere, sort of underneath a loose floorboard, or
No, I've got some pretty shameful stuff, but yeah, I don't have a copy. One of the other things, a copy of a role playing game based on Ralph Bakshi's Wizards.
Oy.
The only thing I can remember about that is it had petty dexterity as a skill.
Something that has fallen out of many modern RPGs.
Indeed. So, I guess
that's a lesson there for all of us.
Indeed.
I don't know what it is, but...
Yeah, it sort of occurred to me while Ben was talking that if...
That you wanted to harm yourself? Sorry.
Only during the drawing mud bit. From memory, the town you grew up in was very much... There was kind of an explosion of the New Zealand role-playing scene, such as it is, from where you grew up, Ben. Like the one big sort of role-playing competition or convention of the year for a number of years was there. Or have I got that completely wrong?
Oh, I got the impression that it was a bit weird, because we got everything... Getting access to role-playing games is actually pretty difficult for, you know... Forever. And so I think almost everything was being imported by the same distribution company, Blackwood Gale, I think it was, because they would actually insert a little A5 or something, a little thing you could check off. Oh, what are you interested in? So they're trying to gauge interest about what these sorts of things were. And I don't know anything, any history about that company anymore, but that little card seemed to be in every box of D&D, which is kind of a feat because presumably they were shipping these things all in. But yeah, there was... I can't even remember the name of the competition. I think
I remember it.
RollCon sounds right.
It was run out of a school in the off season.
I think I actually attended it the year after I moved away, because there was a weekly group up at a primary school. We played some weird games there. It basically just got the school hall open and people would sit down and play games. It wasn't that huge, but I often got the impression. Which totally put to lie the fact that people were printing books and making money, and there was a big explosion of cultural awareness, both bad and good, at the time in the States. That, you know, there was quite a high number of role players in New Zealand. I think it's just that it clumps weirdly wherever you are.
They were just all where you were, basically.
Yeah, and I wasn't aware of most of them. True, New Plymouth is a nice, exciting town, so role playing may have been an escape for lots of people. So, yeah, I can't really comment on that, but I know that convention went on for several years. It was a very by-the-book, old-school AD&D kind of festival, though, and was a little bit... Yeah, I remember a couple of the games were not that great because they often had the rocks fall, everyone dies kind of motif.
Granted, I only ever went to one of them, and yeah, that was our first AD&D fest, which was kind of interesting. Anyway, sorry about that. It was just suddenly something that struck me about the sort of the bizarre is perhaps the wrong word, but the strange arrangement of role playing culture in New Zealand a number of years ago. Clustered in this small coastal town.
Well, I think there's always clusters around places. There definitely appears to be gravitational points, you know, in various places. I think, you know, we were discussing Fear the Boot earlier, and there seems to be quite a The St. Louis area appears to be really strong as far as role-playing representation. Chicago also seems to have a big representation there. And it might just be because we're hearing about them now via podcasts and the like. So it's hard to tell. Someone should do a census or something.
True. Or we can just ask somebody who lives somewhere closer to the action than we do. So, Mac.
Oh. Nice. It's almost
Yes, I'm quick to the grant proposals. Yeah. I mean, I've been fortunate that since I became interested, I've never lived a place where, you know, it was an unknown activity, which doesn't mean that I've actually done that much of it since college. But I think, you know, probably it's one of those things you need kind of a minimum population interested to get it going. And then, you know... People say, hey, what's that weird thing you do on Saturdays? It's like, oh, you want to stop by? And some don't run screaming. And
those are the keepers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that critical mass of folks. Shall we actually look at the card? Did anybody?
Oh, sure. Card.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That thing with the alligators and gardening implements.
Yes.
Oh, somebody had to go there.
Oh.
Don't go to urbandictionary.com because.
Okay.
Oh, dear.
They have other definitions that we just probably don't need.
I am so glad I did not Google this.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of had to. I was going to really manage to come up with a decent kind of notion. Do you want to know how desperate for ideas I got?
I think it would be wrong of us to deprive our loyal audience of that knowledge now that you've brought it up.
I hold in my hands first edition Werewolf's Player's Guide, and I've looked up the section about were-alligators. Who are, you know how the characters in Werewolf could turn into horrifying battle machines?
Yes, he says, dreading the response.
Yeah, they're gigantic Krynos forms, which are like, basically, you took two animals, smashed them together, and made sure they had extra muscles and claws. The midway form for the Mokole, which I'm probably mispronouncing, is basically a dinosaur. Yeah, and it's kind of... It's nothing terribly out of place in it. It all works in with the whole guardians of history, the nature, and so forth. But, for 4 or 5 pages in the middle of a splat book, I don't quite know why they put it in there. Because either it would be a really big disruptive element in your game. Somebody who turns into a dinosaur, and they're a little bit sketchy about the sizes, but I think, I don't know if the veil and so forth that works for werewolves works for velociraptors, but it's probably going to cause comment. And yeah, it seems like an odd design choice. There's lots of other species. There's were sharks and were spiders and were rats. And were rats are pretty cool, actually. But it's one of those things that you put in a player's guide, it will stick in a player's head like the ram python chunga thing, and some unfortunate GM will have to deal with this player who's obsessed with having a were-raptor. And you've got like 5 or 6 pages, some fluff, some abilities, some stats, and either they are going to be a huge disruptive element in the game, or they're going to have one pass, a couple of abilities, and, they can probably make a good character out of it if they're not completely obsessed with being a were-raptor. But it seems like a really interesting choice. I mean, it was the days when Splatbook sold like hotcakes, and, if you're going to check out a 230-page soft cover and say, hey, go shithouse, I suppose so.
You may as well have some pictures of dinosaurs in it.
Yeah.
Indeed.
I will say that I can think of worse were combinations that you could come up with.
Yeah?
Were squirrels would be kind of pointless.
But adorable.
Yes. Were jellyfish.
I did run a game in which one of the players was a were amoeba. Well, one of the player characters was a were amoeba. I'm not certain on the player.
true. Although that led to some really touching moments of role playing. People were convinced that the character would do something, sacrifice themselves, and be seen falling from a great height, or about to be crushed by something, and would turn up fine. Everyone's going, "What's going on?"
Yeah, it was a good thing that it was a drama point type system.
Yes.
Oh yeah, I spent some drama points. Yeah.
Yes.
The fact that it was a Gulot suggestion that got you to velociraptors.
Yeah.
I just kind of found amusing because at the point at which I found in an Earthdawn supplement a picture of one of the, I've forgotten the name of the species, but they're basically a humaniform, somewhat swashbuckly lizard critter.
Something like that?
I cannot remember.
Yeah, yeah.
But in any case, having found a picture of a very piratical looking one of these things, I went and showed it to the aforementioned Gulot, who immediately said, "I must play this character." That being very much their sort of character. So it's sort of appropriate in that way.
So, That's partially my confession. They hadn't come up with a good concrete idea and was, loitering around looking at the thing. Might be my lack of exposure to Appalachian celebrations and so forth, or swamps in general. Though we have swamps here, they're a little less alligator infested. Most of the lizards we have are about maybe 2 to 3 inches long, if you're lucky.
Yeah, I've got to say that hoedown I tend to associate with parts of the United States that don't have swamps and alligators, although that might be totally my own mistake. But you got to do something, and it's got a better ring to it than swamp alligator hootenanny.
That might be a Pistols at Dawn question, but yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was pretty much my crap weaseling out. It's a technical term of coming up with anything decent so far. Has anyone else come up with a proper idea before I dive back into my treasure trove of terrible role-playing supplement?
I do have a proper idea, but I have a thought for your one.
Oh, okay, cool, yeah.
Well, it was just, and this is based on a very hazy recollection of how the werewolf setting worked, but I seem to recall that there was very much the furry guardians of the environment vibe.
Mm-hmm.
The sort of the fuzzy superheroes. And there was a lot of stuff to do with community and sort of certain magic spots that needed to be protected and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I would tend to go with, well, if the werewolves have this, then presumably the other were creatures also have these protected spots, potentially in places where being a wolf doesn't make a great deal of sense. Mm-hmm. And this sounds like a meeting of were creatures.
Yeah, that would be a sensible approach. I mean, notionally, alligators are supposed to be pretty solitary creatures. So if they have a human aspect to them, and yeah, you're right, the werewolves are all about their tribes. There are 9 of them, I think, plus some others because they didn't talk about them because they were a little bit worried that they were insane. And each sort of like family unit was like in charge of a particular area. And generally the cairns, which were there, the places where the Earth's spiritual energy was still strong, where it hadn't been tarmacked over or blown up. And so they were generally trying to protect these natural spots, which had connections into the spirit world and so forth, and various other benefits for spiritual creatures. And yeah, you're right. One of the things they point out with the werewolves, being one of the apex predators on land, it's all very good. And that where their land stops, there are apparently were sharks, which probably are an issue. But then again, at some sort of transitional element like a swamp or estuary, yeah, there would be were alligators looking after things. And the idea that, instinctively the reptile side means that they're quite solitary, but they have to come together to address some of their human concerns and, probably keep up with things. And I don't know, you've got moonshining were alligators in the swamps. So. In the swamp somewhere. That would be a pretty dangerous combination by the sounds of it, but yeah, it could be a
completely different complexion on the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie Hard Target.
Yeah. Or the song Copperhead Road.
Ooh.
Yeah, so if you treated the cultures, respectfully, you could get quite a gritty, exciting kind of sort of like a low-key political sort of rough and tumble game where you're actually negotiating the salt of the earth kind of characters who can also turn into gigantic flesh-eating reptiles if they happen to feel the need.
And potentially gives you the basis for a Lost Valley of Gwangi role-playing game. From memory, movie, effectively Lost Valley with dinosaurs. It's yay dinosaurs movie from recollection.
Huh.
The way a lot of Lost Valleys seem to be.
Yeah. Yeah, it might be in the middle of the desert, but you cross over the ridgeline and suddenly it's a lush tropical valley, for some reason, filled with dinosaurs. It's just in this case, you wander in, you see the dinosaurs, one of them turns to you and says, "Oh, fuck."
Fred, did you leave the gate open?
Yeah. Son of a...
There goes the neighborhood.
Nice. Yeah.
The hairy kids are here.
Hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. I thought it was a very weird take on Dinotopia. Cool. Anyway,
Okay. So yeah, that is workable. Yeah, if you're looking for a sort of quite a tense sort of game, something about the whole milieu of a swampy kind of Everglades kind of feel. Hoedowns, maybe not.
So yeah, it's an interesting question. What do you have for a threat I mean, there's, you know, land developers are a real, you know, I mean, I think these days it's pretty much illegal to fill in wetlands, but in the States, but you only have to set it back maybe 20 years and
possibly
good potential out of that. Or
the threat could be introduced species. I think, is it either boa constrictors are actually making a big presence in the swamps in Florida.
Right.
I don't know whether that's cool or horrifying.
I don't understand. It's pretty horrifying. Yeah. Big snakes.
As invasive species go, that's a pretty alarming one.
That's pretty damn invasive.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, they may not eat the crocodiles, but they'll certainly eat all the prey that the crocodiles have. And if they're succeeding a bit more, that could be very... Burmese pythons and boa constrictors. I might save this link for the show notes.
Sweet.
It's also making me think of a really horrible horror movie called Frogs, probably from the 70s or maybe the late 60s. The frogs don't actually do a damn thing themselves, but they seem to be like the ringleaders of this entire, you know, all of the wildlife in this swamp is just kind of pissed off, and they kill this, you know, kind of dysfunctional southern aristocratic family who own the plant that's been polluting the swamp. And I think one member is actually choked to death by Spanish moss, which is it was bizarre. But yeah, before anybody gets killed, there are these close-ups of frogs going and that seems to be the call to action. So.
Help, I'm being threatened by stock footage. Ah!
Yes. Wow. It was definitely had an era of stock footage theater about it.
Awesome. Yeah. That could be interesting, yes. If you could, say, take it out of the context of, say, were creatures and just say, this is an alternate sort of place where reptiles walk around to do the talking, not people. And there's some sort of conflict brewing between these two cultures. That could be an interesting thing.
Mm.
Depends how you feel about playing reptiles, I suppose. Cool. All right. That's gone from a feeble excuse to a workable basis for a game. Excellent. The process works.
Huzzah! Thanks. Yay.
So, Mac, do you want a swing at an idea?
Yeah, well, actually, I think it's a good time because mine is actually, through convoluted means, ended up somewhere slightly next door to that. So the first thing is that I got it into my head that hoedown sounded like slang or code word, and I did not look up Urban Dictionary, but I kind of gravitated towards it as, you know, people getting together for a fight. And so I was kicking that around, not sure what to do with it, when I happened across an article about the fact that Tokyo's biggest Yakuza organization had undergone a schism. And all the unpleasantness this meant for people in the, you know, disputed territories. So that kind of gave me the context for the hoedown. And I did kind of settle on poking around for a genre, and it did kind of seem that some sort of urban fantasy might be a good one. And so this is kind of pulling slightly some inspiration from Shannon Maguire's Encrypted series, which I've got to admit, I've only read the first book of it, but just sort of the hidden city is basically occupied by all of these things that come from urban legends and stuff like that. So, you know, it's like there's Sasquatch and Chupacabras. So what I ended up with is that the swamp alligators are this criminal gang that is at least partly from, at least founded by sewer alligator folk, but has sort of spread its influence in the city where this all is taking place, which is probably a fictional city that, you know, rather resembles New Orleans, but honestly isn't. No. And that this gang, this is undergoing this schism, and the different factions are setting up for a major war. I actually kind of then, because, you know, just a game around we're going to have a big fight didn't sound very interesting, so I kind of veered more into trying to prevent that or people from the outside. And so my thought is that there's sort of a unofficial mayor to the, you know, undercity community who has managed to broker some sort of truce and then has gone missing. And so tensions are mounting up again, and maybe the players are perhaps this uneasy alliance from some people from the different gangs, or, you know, perhaps just people who are innocent bystanders, but they're trying to find, you know, this peace dealer before everything goes to hell.
Hmm.
And so everybody will be playing some sort of, you know, odd creature. I would actually like to steer people away from the werewolves and the vampires and try to get them to go a little bit more out there, but kind of depend on what people were willing to buy into.
Cool. Yeah, I always like the third way kind of games where rather than the players being on one established faction or the other, they're kind of just folks stuck in the middle. So kind of removes the grotesque force option, but
right.
Having people say either working between the two elements or, you know, being a third minor faction, they get to go, right, we've got to do this, and overwhelming firepower isn't the place we should go. Let's think right. about other things. I always find that really quite attractive. And I like the idea that playing urban fantasy, but playing urban fantasy with just off-kilter wacky things, representatives of other species and other sorts of cryptid characters would be pretty cool.
The sewer alligator in particular, just because that's such a fantastic, pervasive urban myth.
Mm, yeah.
Maybe steer clear of the cannibalistic humanoid underground dweller. I never saw that film, but I can still remember the cover on the videotape.
Yeah, I think I might be trying to not encourage that particular.
Steer away from that one. Hmm. That's kind of fun, because you've got a certain race against time aspect to it. I mean, presumably mm-hmm. there's going to be things that the characters can do to add a little bit more time to the clock before everything goes to hell.
Yeah. Mm.
But ultimately, they've got to find that guy.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the tricky bit. I mean, it sounds like it's kind of in the one-shot territory.
It would probably have a fairly conscripted arc, but one of the things that would be important, I think, would be to make sure that everyone's got a reason to not skip town, to deal with the issue that's at hand. You know, it's like their uncle's store is kind of right in the middle of the division line between these two territories, and, you know, or, you know, it might be something that is considered a strategic resource by both sides.
Right.
Is currently neutral, but won't be the instant everything starts to go to hell.
Kind of strikes me that it's, as you say, you could do a hell of a one-shot. For a longer game, I don't know how anybody else would approach it. I would probably approach it with sort of figuring out, here is a rough timetable of what's going to happen, assuming the players do nothing.
Right.
And then just keep tweaking that. I don't know whether I'd go as far as the... I forget which of the Fate engine games, could have been Diaspora, had a bunch of variant systems for using mechanics and sort of moving events along tracks and that kind of thing. There's maybe an opportunity for that, or that could just get annoying. I'm honestly not sure.
Hmm. What I would probably aim at is take the players through a bunch of, if it was short term, they would be kind of like physical pieces of evidence or actual sorts of, you know, tangible things. If it was long term, it would be a bit more personal goals and growth and learning about themselves. But have it come to the point where they're picking up things and they get to the point where they've rescued the dude and fix everything and discover something, either he's behind the conflict or he hasn't survived being kidnapped. Something that makes them go, oh, holy crap, it's up to us.
Yeah.
But the process of going through the journey will have given them, you know, the blackmail letter or, you know, just the... just
or the credibility.
The credibility, perhaps. The contacts, exactly. Depending on what sort of timescale you're going. It's like, you get to the end of that and you say, oh, you know, rather than being generic, you know, hostage rescue, it becomes, we've got to step up, we've got to take this to the next level because we are the people who know most about the situation now. We've gone through this journey and discovered, become the people to actually resolve the issue rather than the people just to find the guy who can resolve the issue.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a nice variation.
Yeah,
that sounds a little bit more rewarding than just, hey, you freed the GMPC.
Exactly. Yeah, that's one thing I'd like to, one good thing to build people into the world, to build them into the events that are going on, and get them away from the fact of, like, rather than go and, you know, wander up, flickering into a volcano, shrug, walk off.
Take the MacGuffin to the MacGuffin disposal facility, dispose of MacGuffin.
Yeah. And yeah, you'd have to take, if it was like a short-term game, you'd have to make things a bit more tangible, a bit more obvious, so, you know, they're holding on to the things that they need to take to resolve the issue, but them becoming the people who actually get to resolve the issue, I think it'd be pretty fun. I think it'd be pretty worthwhile, and especially if it grows the characters along the time, if it's a long-term thing.
Yeah. Also, is anybody else imagining the sewer alligators as essentially being Master Croc from Kung Fu Panda 2, or is it just me?
Just you.
Okay, good to know. It's important to check these things.
That's not a bad kind of shape for them. I gotta admit, I've got in my head, this is slightly obscure, but what the RPG Zantabulous Sorcerer of Zoe, which is a fairy tale RPG on the PDQ system, and it has, for flavor, a description of the actual campaign the guy ran with it, and one of the guys plays a sort of cigar-chomping anthropomorphic alligator.
Awesome.
And so I can't help, you know, picturing that slightly when I'm thinking of...
Yeah, I think I got that in a bundle at some point. It's one of those ones I should read through. Awesome.
Oh,
That sounds really cool. It's got lots of applications. Could slot that into fantasy, modern day, sort of cyberpunk kind of era pretty easily. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could reskin it, as it were. I'm seeing guys with very 90s haircuts and chunky leather jackets for some reason, but that's just me. Maybe just do some Hong Kong action theatre. Maybe just straight underworld thugs who just happen to really like alligators or something.
Yeah.
Whereas I am now kind of setting the thing in your very classic Capone era gangster type setup. So alligator cat.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I had been thinking modern, but the noir era does sort of have an appeal because you could just picture, you know, the hard-boiled detective being the kind of person who would get caught up in this.
Mm. Cool.
Someone a favor or something.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's always a problem that drags them into those sorts of situations.
Yeah. Depending on where you're going, how sort of cryptid or cryptic you're going, sort of animated gargoyle with a Tommy gun, because I'd want to.
Yeah.
No, I didn't really have a good because, other than because it would look cool.
I think a lot of great ideas in gaming are... start from things just about as substantive as that. It's like, that would be cool.
I was a bit mean on the idea of somebody going, I want to be a velociraptor. But yeah, you're right. A lot of stuff is somebody gets an idea in their head and goes, Papa wants, and takes that enthusiasm and works it into a game rather than, you know, crashing into it like an iceberg or something.
I have spent some time over the last couple of weeks trying to figure out how to run a game solely based on somebody who wanted to play a self-decorating tunnel. They'd heard about tunnels and trolls. They wanted to play a tunnel.
That's challenging, I've got to say. It sounds like you'd run the risk of some of the horror stories you hear about, like the druid who refuses to go into town.
Or the ninja who never actually interacts with the rest of the party or allows them to be aware of their existence.
Yeah.
Oh, the infamous well giant.
Well giant?
They're incredibly deep.
No, there is going to be to vote Ben off the podcast.
If the tunnel moves itself, still need the right party to go with it. But
if the game gets run, it will be recorded as an actual play. Whether it's going to be put under the "I swear I will never do this again" category, or the "Look, I am a genius" category, time will tell.
Only history can judge.
Indeed, yes. Only history can judge me. And they'll probably do it reasonably quickly. So, yeah. At least there's some immediacy.
Yes.
History will get right on that.
Indeed. I did not actually go with real alligators or fictional alligators or any form of alligators for my idea. Okay. I kind of feel like I've let the side down.
No, some of the best things that come out of this are where people get really metaphorical.
I am glad to hear it. There is always the vague concern with some of the ideas that we come up with. You've got to make 4 or 5 leaps of logic and a few pole vaults of what the hell to get to the card from my idea. I read the card and was reminded of a song from, I think the album came out sometime in the 70s. It was basically an album of sort of collaboration of a bunch of people, including some people from a band called the Holy Modal Rounders. I'll chuck in some link in the show notes. On an album called Have Moisey, which is very much kind of backwoods fiddle-playing music kind of thing. On which there is a song called Hoodoo Bash, which basically describes a bunch of very strange people arriving in town for a party. A very strange party involving an awful lot of mind-altering substances. I think the line "Thunderbird wine and a pound of hash" comes up, which gives you an idea.
Okay.
And I couldn't put that idea down, and eventually came up with, I think that's the setup for a game sort of touching on the carnival comes to town sort of horror, and Something Wicked This Way Comes would probably be Ray Bradbury. Would be the classic one of this, that I'm seeing this as the sort of game where you've got a town, a fairly generic Anyplaceville kind of town, and then the strange people come to town. Could be a carnival, could just be a gathering of folks, and things start to go wrong. And having listened to a couple of Gutter Skype's episodes where they're playing the game Peter and the Monsters, where everybody's a 10-year-old... the idea of doing this as the sort of genre of a bunch of kids see the interesting thing happening, become aware that it's actually a threat, and nobody believes them, and it's up to them to fix the problem. So in this case, the swamp alligator hoedown will be okay. It's very much feeding into the idea of anybody from the outside who does things differently is clearly a threat and wrong. So we could set this very firmly in the 50s. But that's where I am going with this one. Obviously, the idea needs some work.
Yeah. Well, your carnival comes to town thing did kind of spark something which would fit in with your kids save the day thing. Because if you have whatever this strangeness is be attractive. So, that there's less of a, the outsiders are weird and awful, and more like, oh, hey, that's fascinating. But, the grown-ups take whatever it is at face value. Good, wholesome, fun entertainment or whatever. And it's the kids who are sort of like, ooh, that's creepy. No, we don't really have to go see that, do we, Dad?
I would look for inspiration of things like American Gods, I think would be a good, if you're going for a vaguely supernatural thing.
I would definitely go supernatural on it. It's the alien in the broader sense of the word horror.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the movies like Super 8 kind of fall into this category as well. Something weird comes to town and nobody is paying attention to the people who actually have the information.
Also, I'm getting a feeling, and I don't know if this was your intention, that this would be metaphorically about crossing the threshold into adulthood. You've kind of got this kind of enticing, repellent thing that's out there. It's all bright lights and grease paint, and but shadows and uncertainty as well. So that these kids are facing this something that's clearly important, but also somehow threatening.
I hadn't thought of it, but that's actually a pretty good one, because ultimately that sort of story an awful lot of the time is about people stepping up, so to speak.
Well, at least confronting something that's sort of a bit alien and weird. Mm. I mean, sort of becoming a, you know, it's the whole growing up kind of thing. It's like the adults aren't concerned by the carnival because they're adult. It's not something they're concerned about. They, as you do, that you forget how traumatic and weird the process of growing up is, because people who do probably don't survive. it's kind of the being a teenager is a weird, unstable period. So the idea that, you know, transforming this confrontation with, when I say confrontation, it means, you know, just addressing the idea that things are changing, that your body is changing, your place in society is changing, your responsibilities are changing. Could, you know, if you want to get metaphorical, it looks like a pretty good opportunity.
That is way deeper than anything I thought of. I mean, it's cool, don't get me wrong. It's just sort of, ooh, that's... I didn't realise I was that deep. Oh, wait, I'm not. Yeah, I can actually vaguely link it back to some of Alex's comments on the previous episode, or possibly the episode that is still to come, because I'm hazy on where they fell in the editing process.
I think if you're talking about the counterculture stuff, that will be all next episode.
Oh, sweet. Okay, I can totally pip him at the post then. Yeah, the whole counterculture and the various sort of counterculture freak out ideas of showing people that there is a different way of doing things. It's just in this case, the people have come to town to show them that their different way is actually kind of horrible and creepy if you look at it hard enough.
Mm. Or it represents something barely trusted, or barely, yeah, something that is definitely outside of the experience of regular folks. It would be, it definitely sounds like something you could see in the 50s. American Horror Story season 3 or 4 was Freak Show. Season 4 was a freak show, and I definitely played a lot of those things, but mostly it was the lives of the performance. When they interacted with the town, other than as a source of entertainment, things generally went poorly.
Right.
Yeah, I could definitely see the notion of it. You could either play it as like a straight supernatural, or kind of like Stephen King's It.
Mm.
That sort of legendarily terrible thing. It's, kids don't quite understand, and maybe they make it, they give it more credence, more energy, and more dreadful power, because, you know, it is something amazing and awful and terrible, because they're just not used to it. And the combination of this level of intense belief and, you know, their youth gives it a terrible kind of power, and it doesn't affect anyone else because they're just not plugged in that way.
Okay.
Or maybe it's horrible threatening monsters and you can just play it relatively straight.
I think it would depend on whether you were going for a short or long term game. If I was going for a longer term game, I would be desperately trying to have, if you went with the full-on circus thing, then the friendly, but with a heavy undertone of creepy ringmaster in the top hat really has to make an appearance.
Oh, yeah.
I think if I was doing it as a longer-term game, it would be one in which, effectively, the players are kind of working their way towards the center of the problem. Kind of a battle of wits sort of thing.
Hmm.
And having victories or losses along the way of either opposing what the carnival is doing or failing to oppose what the carnival is doing.
Cool.
Yeah, indeed. It's interesting, the question of what the victories the kids can score are. Because that's the challenge with kind of a low-powered, I mean, even lower power than the people around them, party. So you'd kind of need to go, feels like you'd need to go with something where, you know, their ability to perceive it clearly is a strength beyond just recognizing there's a problem, maybe.
They'd also have the advantage of not being taken seriously to some degree.
Yes, that's a good point. That's a big trope in that sort of thing. No one takes them seriously, so they don't listen, but the bad guys don't take them seriously.
Yeah. And, you know, the punishment for trespassing or acting suspicious is, oh, go out, get out of here, you kids.
Right.
Not, you know, gunfire or arrest or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. Or so one or two of the larger circus riggers kind of picking them up by their collar and carrying them out of the place and dropping them off, not shutting them in the lion cage and walking away whistling.
Right. Yeah.
Also, possibly it's the, they may be protected to some degree, playing off the whole being innocents. They can't be directly influenced by some sort of malign supernatural thing. They don't have a lot of ability to deal with it, but in certain circumstances, they may have way more than anyone, than others.
Mm.
Mm.
Oh, indeed.
Yeah.
Well, it's something way cooler than what I started with.
That could be quite, it could be very, very spooky. It's coming up to the season as well.
Oh, yeah.
Quite a good Halloween-y sort of event. Yeah. So no, I quite like that idea. Don't know where you got from Swamp Alligator Hoedown, but I'll take it.
Well, yeah, like I said, a couple of broad jumps in a pole vault, but having got a song stuck in my head based on reading the card, I couldn't get the bloody thing out again, so eventually had to run with it. All right, well, that's... I just checked the email bag and the Fear the Boot forums, and nobody has yet cropped up with a suggestion, so they have missed their chance.
Indeed. Wait for a mailbag episode later on.
I guess that's it then. That's...
Yeah.
That is the show.
Mm-hmm.
It seems slightly weird after the last one. Somehow shorter.
Hmm.
Actually, shorter. no, somehow about it.
Well, thank you, Mac, for attending and taking time to give us your ideas and company on the air. So.
Well, and thanks for having me, guys. It's been an interesting conversation.
Yay! And hopefully we have not scared you off.
Oh, no, I'll be listening for future episodes, not just for, you know, hearing how goofy my voice sounds.
I was just thinking that, and yes, you do eventually get used to it. No, we didn't do anything weird with a pitch or anything. It just, that's just sounds strange.
I've heard myself recorded often enough that I have a vague notion what's coming.
It took about a year for me.
Yeah, yeah. I think both Craig and I find ourselves swearing at the stuttery, skipping guy who can't make up his mind where the freaking sentence is going. And it's generally us.
my first attempt at editing, because Kevin, well, Tonya started with the editing, and then Kevin started doing some as well, and then I eventually moved into it. And my first attempt at editing, I eventually had to hand back because I was just sitting at my computer shouting at myself. and I was not being polite to myself. I eventually got over it, but oh my god.
Right. Yeah.
All right.
Well, thanks everybody for listening to another episode of The Big Red Couch. And look forward, I guess, the next fortnight when we'll have the second part of, well, Donut Tax Outrage Outtakes Follow-Up.
I've kind of mentally tagged it as Audient Ideas with Alex, but
Yep,
it's a working title.
Indeed, indeed. So yeah, there'll be plenty of feedback from listeners in that one. And yeah, we'll, following that, we'll have 65. These numbers are coming down really quickly. It's quite disturbing.
We haven't actually drawn a card for 65 yet.
Ooh. Oh, we could do that on air. We haven't done that for a while.
If Mac is up for that.
Oh, sure.
Okay, in that case, I will...
Feel like I'm part of history.
Oh, yep.
Yes, yes, let's go with that. Okay, I have a stack of cards in front of me that I've just divided in half. Mac, left or right?
Left.
Okay. Ben, left or right?
Left.
We're down to a handful of cards. Okay, I have six cards in front of me. Mac, which number?
Five.
Card number five. All right.
That appeared to read An Unconventional War from Jared O.
Awesome. And that will be card 65. And I can't find a pen. And I have found a pen. Yes, yes, we are broadcasting professionals. Yay.
All right. So that's...
Thank you very much, Mac.
Well, thanks again for having me.
Well, it's kind of awesome. It's nice to have other people on the show. And it's nice to have other ideas injected into the mix. And frankly, if they're people who've actually listened and sent in advice and sent in suggestions is kind of cool.
So, farewell everybody, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Next time on the Big Red Couch.
Non-donut related episodes with special outrage guest Alex.
Want to hear more of our shenanigans? Then go to hoarde.net and click on the button that looks like a couch. The Big Red Couch is released under Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported from creativecommons.org. All music on the show comes from the album Universal Fluff Theory by Krakatoa. Visit them at krakatoa.com or follow the link from our page. See you next time!